Welcome to another week of the Dynamic Duo Show. This is Kevin Barrett holding down the fort here. With a little help from Jim Fetzer in the midweeks. That is, Tuesdays through Thursdays. I do my thing here on Mondays and Fridays. Well, I'm bringing on one of my favorite regular guests today. Actually, two of my favorite regular guests will be joining me today. The first guest pretty much needs no introduction. Well, on second thought, maybe he does need an introduction, because if I don't introduce him, you aren't going to know who he is until he starts talking, and that wouldn't be right, would it? Okay, my first hour guest is a terrible, terrible man. Well, that's what the mainstream media used to say about me, and for a somewhat different reason, see? Well, somewhat different only. My first hour guest is responsible for my being depressed and miserable. If I were still sleepwalking in a trance, like so many people are out there, I could very easily cheer myself up by listening to, National Public Radio or, one of these other trance-inducing networks, and I could say, oh, boy, things are going to change. We've had 7 years of this evil Bush administration where Cheney blew up the World Trade Center, murdered 2,000-plus Americans to launch Nazi-style criminal wars of aggression. But now we have this really cool presidential candidate, Barack Obama. I mean, he's brilliant. He's black. That's nice. He seems very moderate and intelligent. He weighs his options back and forth. He was against the Iraq war at the beginning. Oh boy, what a good guy. I am so happy that this guy looks like he's probably going to be the next president. And, it would make my day and my year. And I would be all cheered up and I could, go back to sleep. But there are some people out there whose job is just to disturb our sleep and to say, hey, wake up, snap out of it. And my first hour guest is one of those people. Second hour guest is too, but my first hour guest is, you may have guessed by now, Webster Tarpley, the bane of the Obamatons. Maybe some people think he's a little over the top on this particular issue, but I say we need him, and his books on Obama are absolutely essential reading for everybody, no matter what your opinion on the subject. You gotta get both sides, and he is telling I won't say necessarily the full total truth, because I think the truth is multifaceted, but he is telling a truth that needs to be heard in this hour if our nation isn't going to go back to sleep. So, hey, welcome, my good friend and gadfly, Webster Tarpley. How are you, Webster?
Thank you, Kevin. Thank you very much, and congratulations on your campaign and all the work that you're doing.
And thanks. Congratulations.
We all owe you a debt of gratitude.
Publication schedule. You've got two Obama books out already in the last several months.
Well, I did this for a reason, and actually today I think I can point to some rather authoritative confirmation. I began writing in January of this year, and my first book was Obama, the Postmodern Coup, The Making of a Manchurian Candidate, and that already came out in April. And now in September, I've also published Barack H. Obama, The Unauthorized Biography. And both of these are available at Amazon.com. And I'm trying to give you some reasons to be interested in these. And it comes in the form of a speech by none other than Joe Biden, the vice presidential candidate with Obama, who was speaking yesterday, Sunday, in Seattle, Washington, at a place called Emerald City. I guess that's a suburb or a neighborhood of Seattle. And what he did, Obama is this famous motor mouth, right? He's got a mind like a rag bag, and he blurts out the things that he's been hearing in his briefings. And he's actually been getting some briefings. He's been getting some briefings even from the Bush administration. But I think the most important ones are the ones coming from people like Zbigniew Brzezinski. Anyway, the news item that you might have just heard, I think, is absolutely critical to understand what's going on. I had argued in these two books that Obama has three things about him. He's a puppet of the Trilateral Commission, that is of Brzezinski, Rockefeller, Goldman Sachs, and these people. And he has two basic tasks as a puppet president in the tradition of Jimmy Carter. One is to impose this crushing economic austerity. In other words, to cut the living standard of the American people by a third or by a half or however much they can attain, and then use that money for these bailouts. Use this to bail out Wall Street and and shift the resources into maintaining this quadrillion dollar derivatives bubble. That's one side. The other thing is to solve the crisis of the Anglo-American world empire and U.S.-British world domination, they're going to have to undertake something very risky and very serious in regard to China, Russia, and other countries grouped around them, be it Sudan or Pakistan, countries that are considered strategic allies of either China or Russia or both. They've got to smash, in other words, this Shanghai Cooperation Organization. So here's what Biden says, and he's very useful. He blurts it out. He says, mark my words, it will not be 6 months before the world tests Barack Obama like they did John Kennedy. The world is looking. We're about to elect a brilliant 47-year-old senator president of the United States of America. Well, I beg to differ on that one. The polls actually tell us something else right now. Remember, I said it standing here. If you don't remember anything else that I said, says Biden, watch. We're going to have an international crisis, a generated crisis, to test the mettle of this guy. Now, think what this means. We're going to have a generated crisis. Who is we?
That doesn't sound good.
Who is we? And who generates the crisis? This is to a fundraising group. These are bigwigs. This entire statement has something similar to this Bittergate by Obama, where he was talking to a group of ultra-rich left liberals in San Francisco back in the springtime. Then he goes on. He says, I can give you at least four or five scenarios from where it might originate, says Biden. And he mentions the Middle East and Russia. Now, I'm switching news accounts. I'm switching away from the ABC News report of Matthew Jaffe, which I've been using so far. And now I'm switching to the Seattle Post-Intelligencer. And he gives you these scenarios. He says, we'll have within 6 months, the world will test Obama. One would be a nuclear-armed Korean peninsula that could lead to Japan as a nuclear power, and then China expanding its nuclear arsenal. Possible. The Saudis have built 7,000 madrasas, or religious schools, along the Pakistan-Afghanistan border, says Biden. It's where Al-Qaeda lives. The Taliban is coming back. This is not a joke. Bin Laden is alive and well. Interesting that he worships at the altar of Bin Laden, Al-Qaeda, and all the rest of this stuff. Then he goes on. Pakistan is already bristling with nuclear weapons, all of which can hit Israel. But Obama is unlike anybody he deals with. Now, those are the scenarios, but he also mentions Russia. And in neither of these two accounts that I've seen so far do we hear anything about Russia. Now, that, of course, is the really scary one.
That's the country full of that's truly bristling with nuclear weapons.
Right. They're bristling, and they can blow your head off. And these are intercontinental ballistic missiles of the most modern type, unlike whatever medium range or intermediate range at most that the Pakistanis might have. Now, Biden goes on to say, Obama's going to need your help. And the kind of help he's going to need you. Not financially to help him. We're going to need your influence in the community, because it's not going to be apparent initially that we are right. Oh, my God.
Oh, boy.
It's not going to be apparent that the U.S. is right. What is this going to be, Georgia? Some tin pot fascist?
It sounds like they're using Obama to rally us. We'll be back in a moment.
Cascadia Public Radio.
Trigger!
Welcome back to the Dynamic Duo Show. I'm Kevin Barrett. I've got Webster Tarpley on the line today. He's giving us a very different slant on Obama than what we heard from Jerry Mazza on Friday. Jerry seemed to have some of that patented hope, trademarked by the Obama campaign. You can't say the word anymore without paying your dues to Obama. Webster has a quite different opinion. And if you'd like to talk to him, you could either call in here at GCN. The number is 866-582-9933. Or you could always email me your questions. I'm kbarrett, B-A-R-R-E-T-T, at mayor.com. That's M-E-R-R.com. So, Webster, you're saying that Biden told us that there's going to be another incident. There's going to be something testing this new young president. This harks back to Kennedy, doesn't it? Because, you know, Kennedy had the Cuban Missile Crisis. Well, first, actually, he had the Bay of Pigs, followed by the Cuban Missile Crisis.
And stop at that point.
Okay.
The Bay of Pigs was, of course, inflicted on him by the U.S. intelligence community through various provocations and deceptions. Now, there's no reason to tell Bush about 9/11 in advance. There's no reason to tell Obama the details of what he's going to have to do. He'll be told to follow orders, and he will. But there's much more.
Well, wait a minute, Webster. If Kennedy didn't, why do you think Obama necessarily will?
In the case of the Bay of Pigs, he followed orders up to a point, and then he pulled back. The difference is that Obama is a scoundrel and a degenerate. And they thought that Kennedy was that, too, but he turned out to be something.
Okay, Kennedy was gobbling drugs. He was chasing women. I mean, Obama's personality couldn't really be that much worse, could it?
I think it can be much, much worse, because I think in the case of Obama, they've had, in my estimate, 25 years to train him, to indoctrinate him, and to profile him, and that is why he is where he is. In the case of Kennedy, it's a relatively slapdash job. In the case of Carter, it's a period of 4, 5, 6 years at the most. With Obama, 25 years. And they've got the Resco indictments hanging over his head. But let's get back to the confrontation, because this is where the question of world history is decided. Biden is telling us in Seattle at this fundraiser, there's going to be a generated crisis. It will involve Russia or the Middle East. The righteousness of the U.S. cause will not be apparent. And then he goes on and says, look, in terms of economics, it's not going to be easy. We have to clean the Augean stables, right? This is one of the labors of Hercules. Hercules, of course, is one of the few people who, actually the only human who became a god, who wasn't born one, remember? At least in the ancient world. And he gets this, the constellation. His image is set among the stars. So Obama is the new Hercules who will clean the Augean stables. But now, he says, this is more than just a capital crisis. This is more than just markets. This is a systemic problem we have with this economy. In other words, I would say a world economic and financial depression of unimaginable and unprecedented proportions. And how will Obama respond? It's obvious by austerity that will not be popular. We'll be back into this in just a minute. Now, since it's Biden, he's got to boast that he knows more about foreign policy than most of other senators have even forgotten. He knows more than what he's forgotten is more than what they know. But now, he tells us that the popularity of Obama will collapse very rapidly. We will be sitting here a year from now, so we're talking October of 2009, and he says, you will be saying to me, oh my God, why are they there in the polls? Why is the polling so down? Why is this thing so tough? Well, says Biden, that's because we're going to have to make some incredibly tough decisions in the first 2 years. I'm asking you now, be prepared to stick with us. Remember the faith you have at this point, because you will need to reinforce us. There will be a lot of you who will want to say, whoa, wait a minute, whoa, I don't know about that decision. And then he goes on to say, popular decisions are not sound, because if they're popular, they can't be sound. Now, this, I think...
Right. Like bailing out the billionaire bankers was unpopular, so that's a very sound decision.
And
we know,
as of last Thursday, we know from Cramer on CNBC, who's in touch with the Goldman Sachs and related Morgan Stanley circles, they want multiple bailouts. And as Cramer says, We want multiple TARPs. I'm afraid they call these TARPs. Troubled Asset
Relief. Oh, my God. They're lining up with their begging buckets.
Direct attack on me. They call this stuff a TARP. And then, says Cramer, they want to loot Social Security. Cramer actually proposed $100 billion ripped out of the Social Security Trust Fund and used to buy toxic derivatives. He says this on CNBC. And this is exactly what Obama, I think he's referring to things of that nature. So remember with Carter, Carter, as soon as he got into office, began attacking his own base. The night of the long knives with Carter came just about immediately with the fake energy crisis. Remember also, Carter threw out every promise he made in his election campaign. Carter promised that he would address unemployment. As soon as he got elected, he said, oh, wait a minute, I got it wrong. It's really inflation, because this is what the circles at the Federal Reserve were telling him. So it won't be popular. And he goes on to say, basically saying the U.S. is in a weakened state. We do not have the military power, nor have we ever, quite frankly, in the last 20 years, to dictate outcomes. And he's talking about something to do with Pakistan and Afghanistan, which, of course, the goal being to destroy Pakistan. And then finally at the end, says Biden, I probably shouldn't have said all this because it dawned on me now that the press is here. So he has blurted this stuff out. So again, generated crisis, possibly involving Russia, the righteousness of the U.S. position not apparent, complicated all of this by the systemic crisis of world finance, the fact that Obama will be attacking and betraying his own base, his popularity will collapse, he'll have to rely on, you know, small groups of supporters. This is a catastrophic perspective.
Well, it actually sounds pretty realistic, given the shape that the economy is in right now and the shape that the empire is in.
Yes, but again, a real president, a Franklin D. Roosevelt, responds to that with measures that build popular consensus on the basis of something real. Obama's basically saying, I'm going to flay you alive with austerity, and you better get ready for it, because I will be the new Carter to the 10th power, and I'll leave you nothing but your eyes to cry with, but I want you to pledge to be loyal to me, because you're my hangers-on and my clients.
Well, some people are already falling off that bandwagon, and if this is how it plays out, a lot more people will be before too long. This is Kevin Barrett with Webster Tarpley. Stick around.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Hey Jude, don't make it bad. Take a sad song and make it better. Remember to let her into your heart. Then you can start to make it better.
Welcome back. This is the Dynamic Duo Show on GCNLive.com, and I'm Kevin Barrett, talking during this first hour with Webster Tarpley, one of the most important geopolitical analysts out there, in my humble opinion. That doesn't mean I always agree with everything he says, but I find it worth listening to and considering. And frankly, Webster, I do think you're barking up the right tree here. We do have a question from Dick in Arizona.
Nice.
Dick says, well, and I'll kind of spin this into my question. He points out that we have a lousy choice of major party candidates here. McCain is a traitor and a 9/11 liar. He wrote the preface to the debunking 9/11 myths book from Popular Mechanics, meaning he is complicit in high treason and mass murder of U.S. citizens. And Obama is a Brzezinski puppet. And then Dick says that they're both obedient to Israel. And this leads to my question, Webster. You've argued that the Israeli Likudnik radical neoconservatives are on the way out. They no longer have their power. But the question is then, well, why is it that both of these major party candidates are bowing and scraping to Israel? Why is it that the U.S. doesn't just tell Israel to go to hell and ride a wave of super popularity in the Arab and Muslim worlds. Pakistan would leap into our arms if we did that. The whole Persian Gulf region that's got most of the world's oil would be throwing their oil at us for free practically if we did that. Most of the world would love us, especially these parts of the world with energy. And yet, what we hear from these candidates is, well, we're going to have to destroy Pakistan because they've got nukes that could hit Israel, yada, yada, yada. So isn't it true, as Dick suggests, that the Zionist lobby is still firmly in control of both major candidates and the entire American system?
I think this is profoundly wrong. I think this is a very superficial and ignorant reading of the way the world actually works. Biden is on record. One of his other little blurtings, which I think is very useful to cite at this point, was a meeting with the Israeli general staff in which Biden, some weeks back, said to the Israelis, Iran is going to be a nuclear power, and you're going to sit still and like it, and you're going to do nothing at all about it. Because I think that is really the U.S. policy. When Obama says he wants to destroy, he basically says he wants to attack Pakistan, and at the same time he wants to talk to Iran. What does he want to talk to Iran about? He wants to talk about arming Iran and turning them against Russia. At least that would be his object. The goal of the U.S. side in any such negotiation would be to barter the kind of thing that Brzezinski did under Iran-Contra. In other words, delivering, and Brzezinski started Iran-Contra, started delivering very sophisticated U.S. weaponry to Iran with the idea that Iran would be a gendarme of the area, even under the Khomeini regime, emphatically under the Khomeini regime, against the Soviets. In other words, Brzezinski's old thesis, Islamic fundamentalism is the greatest bulwark against Soviet communism. And that panned out in particular in the Afghan war. Remember that Brzezinski's modus operandi is to take puppet states, build them up, and play them against the Russians. Did that with Afghanistan, very successful. Naturally, millions of Afghans died, but that's immaterial to Brzezinski. And we've just had this other chilling example. Tiny little Georgia is deemed as an expendable asset to be thrown against the wall of the Russians in order to get certain worldwide effects. So I think underlying this is a totally disproportionate notion of who runs what in the world. I guarantee you that London is 50 to 100 times more important in terms of making actual policy than anything coming out of the Israel.
Well, could it be, Webster, that some of the powers that be in London and New York are profoundly loyal to the state of Israel?
No, I don't think they are. I think, as a matter of fact, if you look at Samuel Huntington's scenario, remember Samuel Huntington was Brzezinski's sidekick in the Carter National Security Council. The scenario in The Clash of Civilizations is that Israel is annihilated, wiped off the face of the earth. And this is inherent in Brzezinski's strategy. It's similar to, you can look, compare Israel maybe usefully to someplace like Czechoslovakia in the late 1930s. In the late 1930s, the British were determined to build up Hitler and play him against Stalin and get rid of both of them and guarantee another century of British world domination. In the case of Iran, I think it's not clear whether any of this will work. As a matter of fact, the signs are that it may not work. Syria is actually already going the other way. They seem to be gravitating towards Russia rather than
their
way.
They're inviting the Russian military in.
Yeah, but we don't know what's going to happen with Iran. And there is this thing about the deep resentment of many Iranians against the Russians, which has all kinds of historical reasons going back to World War II. But in any case, if Brzezinski builds up Iran in the way that I think it's clear that he wants to do, which is what Biden is saying, that it's going to be a nuclear power, Israelis, and you're going to do nothing about it, at that point, it becomes a wild card situation. In other words, if Iran acquires nuclear weapons, there is some, well, if they don't have nuclear weapons, they can't use them against the Israelis. But if they do get them, Brzezinski, of course, is going to tell them that these are the special nuclear weapons that only go to Moscow. But, of course, they do go other places, too. And at that point,
the Israelis have 400-plus advanced weapons. The Russians are bristling with weapons. How could the Iranians actually use these against anyone?
I don't think they would. But you can see what the point is. That, in other words, the difference is, under the neocon regime, Israel is the absolute strategic center of the world, and everything is evaluated vis-a-vis Israeli security needs. That is over, I guarantee you. Condi and Gates, above all, and Brzezinski, and the people now running Washington, Mullen and even Paulson, they regard Israel as just another expendable asset in the great apocalyptic struggle against Moscow and Beijing. And as time goes on, that becomes, I think, more and more clear. This other Biden statement, I think, points it out. The reason they want to go after Pakistan has nothing to do with the nuclear weapons. If that had been the case, they would have had to strike Pakistan quite a while ago. The reason they want to dismember Pakistan and break it up into four or five parts is, of course, because this is a potential ally and trading partner of China. Historically, it has been that. It's been an ally and trading partner of the Chinese against India, and therefore Pakistan has to go. And the whole business in Afghanistan now has nothing to do, of course, with this ridiculous myth about bin Laden, al-Qaeda, and the war on terror. But it's obviously being run to kill large numbers of Pakistanis in the northwest frontier area. That's a policy that Obama pioneered, demanded, and extracted, even though Bush is still in the White House. It's now the Obama policy of killing Pakistanis, open season on Pakistanis, that Obama demanded more than a year ago. And that is now official U.S. policy, and Bush has come around to the Obama, meaning Brzezinski, point of view. The goal of all of this is to so discredit and humiliate the Pakistani central government that it begins to disintegrate. So it's not enough to have Pakistan as a U.S. puppet state, because it might, in the critical moment, go with China, right, in the great confrontation that's now looming over the world. So I think the question betrays a fundamental lack of updating your thinking that this is not 2004, not 2005, not 2006. We've had the NIE that tells us that there's no Iranian program, which is, of course, a statement saying there will be no U.S. attack on Iran. There will be no U.S. attack on Iran that I can see. There'll be no British attack on Iran. The Israelis, I think it's probably about a 5% chance. And to continue to harp on this stuff, I think it's crazy when you've got the U.S. bombing Pakistan every day. This country is 2.5 times bigger, has nuclear weapons, and counts for a great deal in the world, although apparently not for many left liberals. And you've also had the Georgian crisis, hurling Georgia and their fascist dictator Saakashvili against the Russians just in order to stoke up a crisis with the European Union. So I think the world really has changed.
You're describing, Webster, seems a little odd with Pakistan, because Pakistan was a pretty close U.S. ally.
Yes, but that's not enough anymore.
Would have maintained that, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but that's not what they're doing. Look at what they're doing. They're going into northern Pakistan and killing people by the hundreds every week. And the purpose of that is to humiliate and mortify the central government, leading to the collapse of the central government. There's no other reading. And that's been clear for 6 to 9 months.
Well, I agree. It's an insane policy, but I guess that's why I can't make sense of it. We'll be back in a bit. This is Kevin Barrett with Webster Tarpley. Stay tuned. Welcome back to the 9/11 Truth Revolution. And what does that revolution really mean? I guess we've learned a few lessons as we discovered that 9/11 was an inside job. We learned that you can't trust the emotionally compelling surfaces served up to us on our television screens. And one of the people who definitely has learned that lesson and helped spread that around is my guest today, Webster Tarpley. He says that we should beware of these emotionally compelling surfaces, even when they show us this superficially charming African-American candidate about to take back the country from the evil Bush-Cheney regime. That may be another false flag operation, another surface myth to rope us in and get us doing their bidding.
It's a pathetic fallacy. Let me also go back to what the questioner said. McCain on 9/11. Sure, McCain is as bad as you can be on 9/11, but Obama, Biden are equally bad. And remember that Obama himself, in an interview with this Hyde Park newspaper, as well as his guru, Jeremiah Wright, espoused what I think is the most insidious of all the versions, which is the CIA blowback thesis, the Ward Churchill version, which says, oh yeah, you bomb them, they bomb you. You kill them, they kill you. That it really confirms this this blood libel at the deepest level. And it's the most demagogic way to embrace the official version on 9/11.
Let me point out that it cuts two ways. On the one hand, people who believe the blowback thesis are likely to want to take down the empire, bring the troops home, stop messing around in the rest of the world, and that's good.
Wait,
but on the other side, it affects precisely the people who are skeptical of official stories, and it ropes them into the official story.
Yes, and in other words, the relation is the vast majority of average people who hear you bomb them, they bomb you. The conclusion is, well, if it's just the jungle, we better kill them before they kill us. And I think that is the worst possible interpretation that you could make. But now let's look at this false flag question, because this, I think, is strongly present in what Biden has said. You may remember, as I have in Obama the Postmodern Coup, back in December in the Atlantic Monthly, Andrew Sullivan, Obama Kool-Aid drinker, wrote this very interesting paragraph in a long profile about Obama saying, oh, it's too bad now. Our ruling class here is deprived of the false flag option because Bush is so hated and so discredited, nobody would believe him. If we had another false flag operation, he says, in effect, a terrorist operation, a lot of people would blame Bush and even more would not believe him. So we don't have this option that we want to have. We want to be able to have more false flags, he says, in effect. Now, when Biden says, we are going to need you to help Obama, not to financially help him. We will need you to use your influence and your influence in the community to stand with him, because in one of these four or five scenarios involving the Middle East or Russia, it's not going to be apparent initially. It's not going to be apparent that we're right. Now, what could that be?
It means they're going to do another lousy, botched false flag operation like
9/11. Yeah, I think that's what it means. It points to a false flag operation under Obama, and I would simply say it's much harder to do a false flag operation under McCain, because with him you do not have the fresh face, the facelift for imperialism. You've got just another tired hack of imperialism with no particular facelift or cosmetic surgery or whatever you want to call it.
Well, he does have experience in debunking 9/11 myths.
Yeah, fine, but so does Obama. So does Biden.
I'm kidding, Webster.
It's the same. In other words, this issue, unfortunately, this issue has been taken out of the election. It could have been in it, but there's nobody interested in 9/11 truth and denouncing future false flags. But I think
there is here in Wisconsin's third district.
Sure. Thank you, and that's important. But in terms of what Biden says, it's not initially apparent. It's not going to be initially apparent that we're right. I think it means that as soon as within the first 6 months of Obama, you're going to have a false flag terror operation, and Obama is going to come forth and try to sell the, I think, relatively cynical, relatively disillusioned U.S. population, and those are good things to be when it comes to false flag. Obama's going to try to sell you a bill of goods, and Obama's saying, we need you to support Barkey when he says these things, because a lot of people are going to be opposed to it. And I think that is really scary. So I would also contrast that if it's McCain, this whole business about the world testing him, I don't think that makes any particular sense. And above all, this idea that with McCain, the false flag route is much, much harder than it is with Obama. This is what I'm arguing the whole time, that what you want to come out of this with is divided government. You do not want to have a one-party state. Obama, Pelosi, Harry Reid is the fascist corporate state. That is the situation where it will be easy for the Wall Street elite to demand more bailouts, another trillion, another 2 trillion, whatever it is, and they will demand the complete looting of the Social Security Trust Fund in order to prop up this $1 quadrillion derivatives bubble. That will be futile, but they will try it. If it's McCain proposing that to a Democratic Congress, that's much, much harder, I think, especially, you know, we've had one round. That was bad enough. But I think it gets harder every time you do it. And you're going to have, I think, a Democratic Congress that's going to be extremely resentful and hostile to McCain. That's good. That's what we need. Ultimately, your goal is gridlock. You do not want the one-party state. Remember, the horrors of the one-party state are the horrors of Bush. From January 03 to January 07, it was a Bush one-party state, White House, Senate, and Congress, House of Representatives, all controlled by the same gang. And now we've got this other gang that come in with left cover, but they're even more aggressive imperialists, more ambitious in the imperialism department, as well as promising a more severe austerity. Notice that the Biden-Obama line on Bush is he was wrong not to demand crushing, killer, genocidal austerity here on the home front in the wake of 9/11, when it would have been possible to cut people's living standards by a quarter or a third under the cover of this emergency. And Bush didn't do it. He said, go to the shopping center and buy things. So you can see Obama, Biden attacking McCain and Bush, indeed, from the right, from the more reactionary, more fascistoid side of things.
So, Webster, you add all this up, and it sounds like you're saying that we'd be better off if the Republicans managed to steal another presidential election.
Well, who knows if they steal it? What makes you think Obama is popular? What makes you think the signs we have so far is massive vote fraud in favor of Obama, which has been clear to me for the past 7 or 8
months. I'm skeptical
months.
Of that, because that's not what I've been seeing.
What do you think this ACORN is? This is basically a fascist organization created by foundations.
They're registering people to vote, Webster. I mean, that's just retail.
They're registering
the wholesale
dead.
Theft that you got to watch out for.
They're registering people who do not exist. In other words, that is vote fraud, what you see. Now, there's the other, of course, what we saw in Ohio in 2004 was vote fraud by the Republicans. Correct. What we see this time is massive vote fraud in favor of Obama.
Well, no, but we have, Webster, we have millions of people being disenfranchised by the Republicans.
Right, but you've also got millions of cadavers being registered by ACORN.
No. You've got maybe dozens of cadavers that are actually going to vote, and you've got millions of people being disenfranchised.
Look, I think this is,
we need to be intellectually consistent here.
Just because you're hearing for one side
doesn't mean you can bend the facts.
No, but there's vote fraud on both sides. In 1976, Walter Mondale went out and gave the slogan for the day, vote early, vote often. Carter won with vote fraud. That's, I think, massively documented by court cases of the time. Vote fraud, in particular, in Ohio. It always seems to be Ohio. The entire intelligence community is in favor of Obama. The vote fraud will be overwhelmingly in favor of Obama. And the polls are faked in favor of Obama, because that is a key part of the postmodern coup, as I describe it. Fake polling, along with vote fraud, is essential to put in people like Yushchenko or Saakashvili or now Obama.
Okay, well, folks, you heard it here first. There's going to be massive vote fraud this time in favor of the Democratic presidential candidate. And if he wins, things are going to get worse. Well, hey, Webster, thank you for your contrarian but definitely thoughtful, well-informed, and all-too-realistic view.
And I hope we can agree on one thing, is that you should win your race there in Wisconsin.
Okay, BarrettForCongress.us. That's my race.
See you soon.
Okay, thanks, Webster. Bye-bye. It's been a great conversation. I look forward to catching up with you again soon. Welcome back. This is the second hour of the Dynamic Duo Show, right here on GCNLive.com. I'm Kevin Barrett. I'm here every Monday and Friday, while co-host Jim Fetzer comes on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. Well, my second hour guest today is one of those who have peeled back the curtain from 9/11, who've lifted up that rock to see what is scurrying around underneath, and discovered that it isn't just a matter of the evil Bush administration. It isn't just a matter of the evil Dick Cheney. No, there's a lot more to it than that. In fact, 9/11 was a symptom of a secret government, a behind-the-scenes group of financiers who are pulling most of the levers and strings, unbeknownst to the broader public. Now, with our $700 billion banker bailout and financial crisis, it's become obvious that these people are in their endgame mode. They're trying to conquer the world, and they're in a hurry to do it while they still have their financial and military power. William Engdahl wrote recently, quote, the Paulson plan is now part of a project to create three colossal global financial giants, Citigroup, J.P. Morgan Chase, and, of course, Paulson's own Goldman Sachs, now conveniently enough a bank. Having successfully used fear and panic to wrestle a $700 billion bailout from the U.S. taxpayers, now the big three will try to use their unprecedented muscle to ravage European banks in the years ahead. This is a fight for the survival of the American century, which has been built since 1939 on the twin pillars of American financial dominance and American military dominance. Full spectrum dominance. That is a direct quote from William Engdahl, and that is what's really going on, folks. The behind-the-scenes financial battles that you don't read about on the front page of your daily newspaper. My guest today has done some research on this as part of his 9/11 truth work, and he has been pointing the finger squarely at the financiers behind 9/11/01, as well as the financial 9/11 of 2008. He's one of my favorite regular guests. He says he has some new information for us today, so I am overjoyed to welcome Splitting the Sky. How you doing, Splitting the Sky?
I'm doing great, Kevin. How are you?
Doing okay. So you got new information for us.
Well, actually, I'm still just building on old information, and but I have unearthed some things that have become very troubling to me. And I'm still trying to peel away all the layers relative to the put option stocks that were traded before 9/11 to the tune of $15 billion in profits for those who gambled on the fact that there were 38 corporations that were either going to lose its share value and or stock value and or it was going to raise its value. Whether it was by corporations that were going to fail, like United Airlines, and their stocks were going to plummet because of the catastrophe that took place on 9/11, and or people like Lockheed Martin and Raytheon, who would benefit, man, from the increase of the war machine that expanded itself into the Mideast and abroad, relative to the attacks that were perpetrated, we were told, by 19 Saudis, which, of course, I'm here to say it was just a bunch of crock. And,
well, I think they told us there was like a, I think like one Moroccan and you know a Moroccan or two and a what an Egyptian, which was
yeah.
But the rest they said were Saudis. But it,
well, the
right, it's a crock.
The relevant fact is that it was none of them, and most of them are still alive somewhere in the Mideast and Pakistan, and they're operating and conducting their businesses and business as usual, and they didn't die in the when the towers came down. I'm still trying to get behind in all of my research, excuse me, in all of my research and the many times that I've been on the different radio programs, I've been constantly using as a format, I've been using the fact that there were 38 corporations that traded to the tune of $15 billion in put option stocks. Many of those corporations that I identified as being beneficiaries of the put option trading weeks before 9/11 occurred are current beneficiaries of the theft of $700 billion from the U.S. Treasury as we speak today with congressional approval. Organizations like financial institutions like AIG, when we profiled the infamous Hank Greenberg and his son Jeffrey and Allen behind 9/11 being major beneficiaries of the put option trades.
Well, yeah, they're actually a wing of Goldman Sachs, which is at the epicenter of the financial 9/11.
Absolutely. And this is exactly what I'm saying right now. And, of course, Citigroup was on that list, and they are definitely right at the epicenter of beneficiaries of this this financial 9/11. Bear Stearns was one of the first ones I called attention to. Lehman Brothers And many of the corporations that that are either being merged and absorbed and or becoming under the umbrella of the mega bankers at this time as we're talking are people that I identified in my previous talks as being beneficiaries of the put option stocks, the bloodletting and the bloodbetting behind 9/11.
So these, now, these folks are trying to take over the world by hook or by crook, by false flag op, or by financial disaster.
Yes. But see, now, and then while I was in there, and I'm just kind of recapping a little bit because I'm getting ready to go into the crux of my discussion here. And basically, as I was trying to follow the money backwards, I found that there's 38 corporations that was, that the SEC wouldn't release to the general public for information. The 9/11 Commission ran, covered it up as if it didn't exist, but then later on said that it did exist, but it was insignificant, man, to their hearings and any of their particular findings. The fact that people knew that those buildings were going to go down beforehand, and those buildings were, and when, and those corporations were going to fail because they had offices in those buildings, people knew that those buildings were going down beforehand, so they traded not just hours before 9/11 happened, but months before it happened. And I contest that in my investigation that I was able to track the money trail, starting with the Twin Towers, the leases on those two towers by Larry Silverstein, Frank Lowry, and purchasing it through the Port Authority, through Louis Eisenberg. And then as I was going through my investigation, I was looking at a fact, something that that revealed itself, the fact that that the Blackstone Group had purchased, that helped financed the purchase of those leases for to the tune of $111 million to Larry Silverstein's $14 million. And I had to keep asking myself, well, who is this Blackstone Group? So I started Googling Blackstone. I come to find out in the long run that Blackstone is owned by the Rothschild family. It one of their main financial transactors in the world of business, the original founder of the hedge fund on Wall Street is none other than George Soros, their point man for their financial dealings and dealings worldwide. So I initially put George Soros to the Blackstone Group.
Okay, and we'll probably have to pick it up after the break.
And I hear the Beatles in the background.
Yeah, Beatles in the background means it's time to listen to some ads and come right back. This is Kevin Durrett with Splitting the Sky. We shall return.
For listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone. Help. When I was younger, so much younger than today, I never needed anybody's help in any way.
Welcome back. Beatles music can also mean that we're about to come back on the air, and that's what it means right now. This is Kevin Durrett. I'm talking with Splitting the Sky. Splitting the Sky is a celebrated Native American activist from way back. I'm sorry I didn't really introduce you properly before. Might as well say it now. He was the guy they tried to use as a scapegoat for the Attica prison rebellion. And he was able to escape with his life from that situation. And since then, he has had a very, very interesting career battling for Native American rights. He's got an acting career going, and now he's got yet another career going as a 9/11 truth researcher and activist, focusing on the financial chicanery behind 9/11, which, of course, may be the most important part of it. Follow the money. So, splitting the sky, you were talking about how you found a trail going from Larry Silverstein, who privatized the World Trade Center shortly before 9/11 after hyper-insuring it and raking in a lot of profits on that, with the Blackstone Group, which you're saying is tied into the Rothschild family, said by some to be the world's preeminent banking family.
Absolutely. Well, that's documented and can be, and if you go to my website, www.splittingthesky.net, as well as my blog, you can dig up that information. I do have all of my allegations are sourced and referenced, so therefore you can pick that out when you have the time to go through, or your listeners have time to go through a very extensive webpage relative to this whole search for who was really behind blowing up the Twin Towers. Now, I'm saying that very definitively because I also found out in my search down the road, I found out that the Blackstone Group has as its own private army the Blackwater mercenaries. Rothschild owns the Blackstone Group. He owns, amongst many other corporations worldwide and banking institutions worldwide, and as well as resources and probably half of the world's printed money anyways. But the fact of the matter is he owns the Blackstone Group, and he also owns, and the Blackstone Group is protected by Blackwater.
You know, I didn't know that. I didn't realize that Blackwater was tied into the Rothschilds.
Yes. Blackwater is tied directly to the Rothschilds. That's their own private army. As well as George Bush's own private army, which is subject to no congressional oversight or any oversight whatsoever from anybody.
Well, you know, that makes me kind of nostalgic for the days when the U.S. military was actually run by the U.S. government.
That's right. It's no longer run by the U.S. government. And now, what I'm trying to say is, I had some very nagging, I've had nagging suspicions, and then I've been researching and trying to dig up for years now. I read this little piece by the former Italian president of Italy, Francesco Cossiga, and he says in November 30th, 2007, CIA and Mossad committed 9/11, says former Italian president. Francesco Cossiga, former president of Italy, says in an interview, all of the democratic circles of America and of Europe know now well that the disastrous 9/11 attack was planned and realized by the American CIA and Mossad with the help of the Zionist world to put under accusation the Arabic communities and to persuade the Western powers to intervene in Iraq and Afghanistan. Now, that's a quote. Now, and he then goes on to say, Cossiga was president of Italy in the early 1990s when the NATO-led Gladio Stay Behind network was exposed. Gladio was a decades-long secret right-wing effort to prevent left-wing forces from taking power in Europe, and the network sometimes staged false flag bombings and assassinations blamed on left-wing groups to discredit them. Cossiga admitted his long involvement in the network in 1990, adding, I am proud of the fact that we have kept the secret of Gladio for 45 years. Now, that was in The Guardian in 2005. I started thinking, well, who the hell was the head? If this ex-Italian president who helped conduct this operation Gladio on the Italian citizenry and created false flag operations, that is saying that the CIA and the Mossad was involved in this operation. I start every time I hear Mossad, I keep thinking about the dancing Israelis. I keep thinking about these Israelis being apprehended by the Drug Administration and Fort Authority, taken to jail and held for questioning for months, for 60 days.
Failing lie detector tests.
And failing lie detectors lie detector test saying that they weren't Mossad agents, when in reality they were Mossad agents.
Even the Forward, the Jewish newspaper, the Forward, printed a story in which they ascertained that several of these guys definitely were Mossad agents.
And it's been certified and that they were Mossad agents. Now I say, okay, so here they are. They're dancing because these buildings are taken down. One of the guys that was busted in the white van that was owned by the Urban Moving Company, which is later found out to be a front organization for Mossad.
And its owner, I believe, is still on the lam, and I believe
he's
he ended up
on
in
the
Israel,
lam
they don't
in Israel.
People.
He refused to face the consequences of his actions for 9/11. He was sent back to Israel, and he never returned. He skipped out.
Right. Well, Israel has a very interesting policy. They don't deport people. If you're Jewish and you're a criminal, you can just go to Israel no matter what you've done. I mean, you could be Charles Manson or worse, and just go to Israel, and you'll never be deported.
You get a complete sanctuary.
Get out of jail.
Then you got Savan Kurtzberg, who's one of those was a Mossad agents that was photographed holding a lighter in front of the Twin Towers with the lighter lit. And all of these agents, there was not only was there only these five dancing Israelis, but there was a number of agents. DEA had arrested up to 200 Israeli citizens. And they were being detained for weeks at a time, and they were quietly dismissed and let loose on suspicion of being potential bombers and attackers at the Twin Towers.
Well, you know, people who listen to my show often, most of them have probably heard this a few times, although, you know, I don't focus on this all the time. But, you know, our mutual friend, Tony Hall, professor of globalization studies at the University of Lethbridge, is concerned that by focusing too intently on the Israeli connection, we could be fostering, you know, anti-Jewish prejudice and so on.
I, for one, do not give a good hoot about being called anything but a pursuer of the truth. That's
you're
me.
Here.
I am not worried about being called an anti-Semite. I'm not talking about anti-Semitism. I am talking about crimes that were committed by not only a handful of selected Israelis within the Mossad organization, but also CIA and SAS.
That's right. An entire global network, including people of many different ethnicities and non-religions, because a true religious person could not possibly do something like that. We'll be back in a bit. This is Kevin Barrett. I'm talking with Splitting the Sky. Stay tuned.
Are you tired of searching for Freak Talk Radio? Well, search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Let me tell you how it will be. There's one for you, 19 for me. Cause I'm the tax man.
This is the Dynamic Duo Show on GCNLive.com, and I'm Kevin Barrett speaking with Splitting the Sky today. We're talking about the financial hijinks behind 9/11 and the financial 9/11 this year. Seems to me, Splitting the Sky, that the financial 9/11, in a sense, didn't work as well as 9/11 did. We've been doing some polls here at BarrettForCongress.us. We found that roughly 20 to 30% plus of the people we polled, and these were actually scientific polls here in the USA, they either believe in controlled demolition, that 9/11 was an inside job, or they're open to that, saying that we need to do we need to study this and do an inquiry. And with the financial 9/11, on the other hand, we found that 79% of the respondents said that we should bail out the people, not the billionaire bankers. The anger over this bailout, this financial 9/11, is already way up there. So, you know, we're starting far ahead of where we started after 9/11, and I think the people may not want to put up with this a whole lot longer.
But I read your surveys and the difference between the lie hop and the my hop, and I happen to go with the my hop. I believe they were criminals, and I believe it was an inside job, and it was controlled demolition. And I'm looking to put him in jail without bail. So I'm not trying to bail anybody out, man. I'm trying to get these criminals behind bars, man, without bail, and to suffer the penalty, man, the equivalent to the crimes of mass murder at 9/11.
Well, absolutely. But including this guy, you know, we're talking about going after the world's most powerful people, the people, as you've seen, who run our global financial infrastructure.
Well, call me crazy, but we got to do it.
And I think that there'll be some fringe benefits to doing it, too, because once we get these people locked up, we can take back our economy.
Yeah, that's right. If we don't get to them, they're going to lose more than the economy. We're going to be annihilated by nuclear warheads. With these knuckleheads, man, going world, man, in the search for international oil and different resources worldwide. They're picking a fight right now with Russia, and we know that the dangers of a potential nuclear confrontation, man, could come about as a result of that. It's the same gang, it's the same people that we've been dealing with since 1913, since the inception of the Federal Reserve. We've got to apprehend them, and we got to bring them to justice, and we got to put them behind bar, we got to put them out of commission. Now, I have thought to myself, getting back, because I don't want to lose my point. Now, I want to ease my brother, Tony Halls, who is my brother. We've consorted on many projects over the years, and as a matter of fact, I sort of brought him into the fold on the 9/11 Truth Commission. But for anybody that's got the anti-Semitic jitters, let me relieve your jitters for being called an anti-Semitic. By saying that the operation that was conducted on 9/11, the controlled demolitions of those buildings was conducted by not only the Mossad, but its partner agencies, intelligence agency, the British SAS, with CIA complicity. Now, I hope, Tony, you feel better. I hope your nerves are soothed, and all the rest of your audience now can start listening with an open mind instead of shutting down as soon as you hear anti-Semitic and or conspiracy theory. Now, wake up and listen to the charges that are being brought. This was put out by a guy, interview. I got to thinking to myself, listen, it's going to take a specialized team to bring those towers down. And I began to think about the Mossad's interest there. And in my research, I came across an article written by a guy by the name of Tom Hennigan. And he identifies a part of a specialized team within the Blackwater group, which, again, is controlled by Blackstone, which, again, is Mr. Nathan Rothschild of the Rothschild Empire in England. And the name of the article is called Team 121 linked to the kidnapping of American soldiers in Iraq, June 19, 2006. Kidnapping of American soldiers in Iraq now linked to Israeli British M16 or MI6 assassination teams. The domestic headquarters for this group are at Fort Bragg, North Carolina. They are now operating in Iraq. This new intel dovetails the Gary Best, Tim Spicer, Victor Bout, Bosnia, UAE connection. These British Israeli mercenaries have been trained on American soil in North Carolina for the purpose of domestic assassinations of politically outspoken American citizens and for counterinsurgency, a.k.a.
Politically outspoken American citizens. Yeah. That wouldn't be anybody that you and I know, would it?
Well, I think we're prime candidates, but that's okay. The truth supersedes everything. We all got to die one day anyways, and there is no fear here. So let me keep reading. Al-Qaeda, created in Iraq. They are named Team 121. Again, Team 121 specializes in counterinsurgency tactics in Iraq, but they have also historical direct links to the 9/11 Urban Moving Systems Group, a.k.a. Mossad, and the attack on the U.S. Team 121, currently directed by the Director of Homeland Security, a.k.a. Mega Mossad Agent Michael Chertoff, have been also used to stage break-ins, a.k.a. Gestapo-like activity against the private property rights of innocent Americans. Again, Team 121 is Israeli Mossad with direct ties to British MI6, Blackwater Blackstone Group. This group operates without oversight with the complicity of former Democratic Senator John Edwards, DNC, and Carousel Group Director Erskine Bowles. Edwards, who has a direct tie to British intelligence, has a personal friendship with British Prime Minister Tony Dunn Blair. Edwards once stated that Bush should look to Blair for real leadership in prosecuting the war in Iraq. We will have more to say about him later in the posting. Team 121 has also been linked to the noted CIA Mossad handler,
Melvin Lattimore. Lattimore has direct ties to the 9/11 Brooklyn Mosque, a.k.a. the Mossad-infiltrated 9/11 bucket shop. A convicted terrorist from the 90s named Ali Mohammed was just recently been released by the Bush Justice Department. Ali Mohammed was a witness to the events surrounding 9/11. Right. Ali Mohammed.
Wait, stop there. They released Ali Mohammed? I somehow missed that one.
Yeah, that's what he says.
Wow, yeah, it doesn't surprise me. Ali Mohammed was working for the U.S. Military the whole time he was the point man for Al-Qaeda.
That's what's coming. A custodial CIA U.S. employee like Osama bin Laden had knowledge of Mohammed Atta's link to the Brooklyn Bucket Shop. Norman, Oklahoma, and Nick Berb. Ali Mohammed actually helped train masquerade ball terrorists in secret locations around the U.S. The purpose for the scripting of domestic and international black ops, a.k.a. terrorist events, the financial backing for Ali Mohammed is none other than Team 121. All right, now I'm going to leave that part of the article there and say that I was thinking, as I was tracking on the whole question of the urban moving systems being a front for the Mossad, I came across another interesting fact. And in this fact, I was looking up, while I was researching that, I was researching the company that had left, that had defaulted on its lease with Silverstein, weeks in advance, the Zim Corporations. Do you know about the Zim Corporations?
Yeah, right. They did. They left the World Trade Center. I think it was about 1 week ahead of 9/11, breaking their lease to do so.
Okay, so now on 2001, on September 11th, the attack on the World Trade Center is orchestrated by Britain, America, and Israel under the orders of the Rothschilds as a pretext for removing the liberty of people worldwide in exchange for security, just as that did with the Reichstag fire in Germany, where the citizens were lied to in order to give up liberty for security. They also used the attacks to gain control of a few nations in the world who don't allow Rothschild central banks, and so less than 1 month after these attacks, U.S. forces against Afghanistan, only one of only seven nations in the world who don't have a Rothschild-controlled central bank. 1 week prior to the WTC attacks, the Zim Shipping Company moves out of its offices in the WTC, breaking its lease and costing the company $50,000. No reason has ever been given, but Zim Shipping Company is half owned by the State of Israel and the Rothschilds.
Okay, and people can read about that being confirmed in Mike Rupert's book, Crossing the Rubicon. We'll be back in a bit. This is Kevin Barrett talking with Splitting the Sky. Stick around.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome back. This is Kevin Barrett on the Dynamic Duo Show, talking with Splitting the Sky, who's on the web at splittingthesky.net. That's the three words all together, nothing in between them, splittingthesky.net. Highly recommended website. Well, Splitting the Sky, you're once again on the trail of the 9/11 and financial 9/11 criminals, who happen to be the same people. So keep on filling us in.
Well, you know, I'm never going to stop being on the trail. I'm like a relentless bloodhound. And I'm on the trail of the blood that was committed at 9/11. And I know how these people operate. I've been a victim. I've been imprisoned by them. I've been beaten and tortured by them. I almost went to the electric chair by the same kind of criminal, this criminal cabal. So, I'd like to make, there was some, and I was thinking about, well, who the hell was the head of the Mossad at during 9/11? And I did a little profiling on a man by the name of Ephraim Halevi, who was the head of Israeli Mossad from 1998 to 2002. And I dug up two quotes from this guy,
relative to 9/11. And I want to read the first quote, which he stated on February the 5th, 2003. And it says, recently retired head of Mossad says his agency has had many secret big successes. Ephraim Halevi, head of the Mossad from 1998 to 2002, is interviewed by 60 Minutes. He denies allegations that Israel was behind the 9/11 attack, saying, needless to say, this is not just a big lie. I think this is really also a travesty of any vestige of truth. He also suggests that some Arab governments may have been subtly promoting this allegation to hurt Israel. But at the same time, he hints that the Mossad has had great secret successes, he claims. Not one big success of the Mossad has ever been made public. Equally cryptically, when asked what moments he is most proud of, he replies, this is something I can't talk about, unfortunately. I am sorry about that. And that's CBS News on February the 5th, 2003.
Well, that's pretty interesting, splitting the sky, because, of course, the Mossad has a long history of false flag ops against the USA, starting with the Lafon affair in Egypt in 55.
And the USSS Liberty and
right.
so on and so forth, going right,
right
through to today. Okay, so now here's an interesting thing he says on between August the 8th and the 15th, 2001, Israel reportedly warns of major assaults on the U.S. At some point between these dates, Israel warns the U.S. that an Al-Qaeda attack is imminent. Cameron, 5/17/2002, reportedly, two high-ranking agents from the Mossad came to Washington to warn the FBI and CIA that from 50 to 200 terrorists have slipped into the U.S. and are planning a major assault on the United States.
50 to 200. Well, how come nobody caught any of those people?
Well,
they rounded up thousands of innocent American Muslims,
yes.
And they never found a single one except for Zacharias Massawi that allegedly had anything to do with 9/11.
Yeah. And then it goes on to say, they say indications point to a large-scale target and that Americans would be very vulnerable. They add that there could be Iraqi connections to the Al-Qaeda attack. That's Wastel and Jacobson, 9/16/2001, Hunter, 9/17/2001, Serrano and Dahlberg, 9/20/2001. The Los Angeles Times later retracts its story after a CIA spokesperson says there was no such warning. Allegations that there was are complete and utter nonsense. Los Angeles Times, 9/21/2001. Other newspapers do not retract the story.
Interesting.
Okay.
So there's a little skirmish in the intelligence community. Of course, filling the sky, I would think that the real situation would be that there would be a few people in the know in these different agencies and many people in the same agencies who would not be in the know.
And talking about another agency, on January 13th, 2002, former German minister believes CIA is responsible for 9/11. Andros von Bueller, former German minister for research and technology and a longtime member of the German parliament, suggests in an interview that the CIA could have been behind the 9/11 attacks. He states, whoever wants to understand the CIA methods has to deal with its main task of covert operations below the level of war and outside international law. Foreign states are to be influenced by inciting insurrections or terrorist attacks, usually combined with drugs and weapons trades and money laundering. Since, however, it must not under any circumstance come out that there is an intelligence agency behind it. All traces are erased with tremendous deployment of resources. I have the impression that this kind of intelligence agency spends 90% of its time this way creating false leads so that if anyone suspects the collaboration of the agencies is accused of paranoia. The truth often comes out years later. Libert and Tomia, 1/13/2002. In an example of covering tracks, Ephraim Halevi, that's the head of the Mossad, head of Israel's Mossad from 1998 until 2002, claims, Not one big success of the Mossad has ever been made public. See February 5th, 2003, CBS News 25-2003. Now, what I want to ask anybody out there, all your listeners, if Hannibal Lecter's name was Hannibal Levine, would we not identify this a serial killer because it might appear that he was anti-Semitic? Let's get real, people. We've got elements within the Mossad, elements within the CIA, elements within the British intelligence that have all conducted this internal job to foister their war plans internationally for their energy grabs worldwide and the conquest of territorial regimes and the overthrow of governments and the impositions of others in order to perpetuate their capitalist machine and their control on the financial institutions of the world. Let's get real, people. Let's not let the fear of being called an anti-Semitic or the fear of being called an anti-Christian or the fear of being called an anti-Muslim or an Islamophobe, let us not let these fears of pointing to who the killers are. If the killer is an Israeli, then an Israeli gets mentioned as the killer. If he's an American, then he gets mentioned as an American. If he's a Pakistani, he gets mentioned as a Pakistani. The name of the game is to identify the killers and get real with this investigation and apprehend these criminals before they bring down the economy and they institute martial law in the United States and they move towards a world conflagration with superpowers of the world like China and Russia.
Well, here, splitting the sky, I agree with all of that. What do you think of Webster Tarpley, who was my first hour guest, and his claim that the Obama campaign is really kind of a stealth campaign to take our eyes off the prize and get us back believing in the system, and then he's going to lead us down the garden path, maybe another false flag op, what have you.
I totally agree with him. I agree that Obama is a very dangerous dude. Obama's foreign advisor, there is none other than Zbigniew Brzezinski, who created the Trilateral Commission with David Rockefeller. Brzezinski is the mad dog that intends, man, to engage China and Russia, to engage them in competition for the Caspian Sea, the Black Sea, oil basins and gas reserves, and then the pipelines in that region. He's a front runner. He's one of the group. Brzezinski is tied in directly with George Soros and the Rothschilds, and their need to conquest those countries. They're going to engage them countries to the point where there's going to be a nuclear confrontation.
And that's what we got to stop, because
that's what we have to stop.
That's a direct threat to all of us in our lives, our children's lives. We've got to stand up and demand the truth. And Splitting the Sky, you have been doing that.
Well, I've been trying my best to do it, and I keep doing it because I got this nagging thing that won't stop. Who really killed our brothers and sisters at the Twin Towers? Again, I keep saying, my family and I were there. We could have been one of the people murdered if we had stayed two more days like we were offered to be able to stay there, promoting my book, The Autobiography of Splitting the Sky.
Well, thank God that you got out of there and you're living to fight another day and keep on fighting for the truth. Thank you, Splitting the Sky. Tell us your website one last time here.
It's www.splittingthesky.net, and I thank my good brother Wayne Frontier.
All right, well, we'll be back with you later, Splitting the Sky. Take care.